The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
Booty program.
Booty, booty. It's going to expand your butt.
You know what it's not?
What?
It's not your beauty. It's your booty.
It's not your beauty. It's your booty, baby. Yeah.
Don't be an ass. Build one.
Adam, God damn, you're brilliant sometimes.
That was awesome.
Can I make a comment real quick? Two things. First off, look at these new shoes.
I see you, dude.
Look at these fucking
He thinks he's fast all of a sudden.
He looks fast. I'm not going
to
lie.
You know what? You don't have to lie. I never look fast, but they're... so I always
got like an iridescence.
Are these your
them.
First pair of Asics?
No, I've had Asics, okay, but you way in the past.
They're a comfortable shoe.
Dude, you know what I feel like I'm walking on?
Very comfortable.
I feel like I'm walking on
pillows.
I'm walking on clouds. I'm like, I don't even feel like I'm walking. I feel like it's the shoe was walking for me. It's really weird.
Yeah, they're taking a break.
One of the best.
We're not even sponsored by Asics, by the way.
No, they're one of the best all around running shoes too. In fact, that's we've never even brought that up. I don't think Nike is like the worst. Yeah. So if you're somebody who runs on Nike, I love Nikes. I wear mostly Nikes, but I also don't run. So if you're somebody who wears, runs a lot,
you stand your ground.
Asics are definitely one of the better running shoes out there. And I know there's some runners out there that are like talking about their, what are those? I always forget the ones that start with an H that are the ugliest shoes I've ever seen.
I don't know. They get crazy with
The Hokas or whatever?
Yes. Those are the ugliest fucking shoes I've ever seen.
That's overboard. You know what those shoes remind me of? Double stuff Oreos. You know what I mean? Like you look inside, you're like, that's just too much. I like the middle.
It's just too
but
much.
But I don't need double.
Yeah, ugliest shoes ever. You have to be a serious runner to wear those things because... I don't care how comfortable and how great they spring you forward.
They're always ugly.
That's why
I do wear Nikes because like at least they look good.
Yeah, you know, that's how I look good walking.
They're not as good.
I see dead people.
I've seen a lot of really small people wear those because they're so thick on the bottom that I think that they're like, oh, I'm taller.
I've seen both. I've
got a 2-inch lift.
What I think it is, it's such a runner's shoe and it's like really that's all it's for that, you know, it's kind of like a sense of like pride. Like, yeah, I run. I run a lot. I need these shoes. Yeah,
I wear my Reebok pumps.
I need these big marshmallow shoes because I run so much.
You know what, Justin? Yeah. I miss Reebok pumps.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when I was a kid, I literally thought if I pump my shoes, shit was going to go down.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you want to play hide and go seek? You want to play
tag? Fight. Yeah.
Hold on a
at
second.
At recess. Yeah. Hold on.
I just pumped up my shoes.
You know, that was really like, I mean, my that was what brought Reebok back when they were getting crushed by Michael Jordan and Nike.
Was pumps.
Pumps. Yeah. That, I mean, that was like their last
saving. A Canadian brand, right?
If I remember the story correctly, they were going to go under like right before that. And that kind of like revived the company.
Do you want to know something funny that just came to me?
It was brilliant though. It's like a little basketball.
It was brilliant. You know what just came to me right now?
What?
Is that shoes in the 80s and 90s is like supplements right now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they were the answer to all kinds of stuff.
Like, remember the catapult? I forgot what company it was that made the catapult.
Well, it's like the strength shoes that had the platform, the duck platform things, the jump shoes, you know?
But as a kid, I remember seeing the commercials for the shoes and be like, oh, fuck, if I get those catapults, holy shit, I'm going to get so much better.
Dude, I had the Bo Jackson like cross trainers. I was like, I'm going to run like Bo Jackson.
That's it. That's
going to happen.
I
don't think it's changed that much. If you really follow like the shoe game with like
we've just been removed from it.
Yeah,
I think
exactly.
The LeBrons. And
yeah, I mean now it's like
but do they talk about the technology that goes?
Yes,
they
absolutely. They talk about now it's about how light and supportive it can.
They
be.
Use a lot of graphics.
The most support and the lightest shoe you can make. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, because in the 90s it was about how like
what carbon fiber.
What was inside the heel that could propel you forward?
Yeah,
like,
remember
this has air. This has a catapult and this has springs.
Yeah.
They
still do that with these like weird cushion things. Like, what's that one where they have like different like
the Zoom?
The Zoom has like little squares that like grab on the ground. It's weird.
It's all kinds of funny shoes.
Yeah. It's strange.
You run hella fast and just run up the wall and shit.
I'm torn.
Into a
being
lizard.
Being a shoe guy, like I'm torn on like shoes now versus. But I liked shoes back then a lot. I mean, half my collection is old school Jordans and stuff. So
Jordans
shoes
were,
I feel like shoes now have just gotten like crazy. They're it was just over the top, and it's hard to get.
They look like space shoes.
Yeah, they do. They look like you're getting ready to walk on the moon or something.
Remember the Larry Johnsons?
Oh my God! Yeah,
Converse.
Yeah. I do remember. Like I remember
streetball ones. I used to have those too.
Yeah, you know, right now, the big joke right now is, right, with Under Armour's newest Curries that just came out. Have you guys not seen that? No. There's all kinds of memes. There's all kinds of stuff floating. Of course, you guys didn't. There's a, of course, Sal didn't, I should say.
Yeah.
What are shoes?
He literally, I'll find them for you guys and show you a picture. And his new, so if you don't know the backstory on Stephen Curry was originally going to sign with Nike. And part of the deal was that he wanted to put that Bible verse on the bottom of his shoe. And Nike was like, not happening. So they poo-pooed the deal.
Mm. And there goes that word again.
Yep. This poo-poo.
You know I do it all the time now. I'm going to throw it in extra now. So after they said no to it, here they are right here. Look at the white shoes and the ones that my buddy sent next to
Which
him.
One?
Well, the one's a joke. The other one's like the real one.
Oh, because I just felt like that's an orthopedic shoe.
Yeah, that's why.
The one on the right?
Yeah, see the Under Armour's?
Yeah.
So
what's wrong with it?
So Under Armour says, yes, you can put whatever you want on
the wrong guy.
I know.
There's nothing wrong with it. You know what it looks like?
It's fucking hideous.
Yeah.
It's not hideous.
Yes, it is.
So you see they're comparing it to like those orthopedic shoes and stuff like that?
Yes.
So there's big jokes going around about how simple and plain and ugly they are, right?
Looks like you could go skiing with these things on.
Yeah, so he signed with Under Armour. The first shoe came out, it was pretty exotic and cool. Well, these most recent ones came out, and everybody is just like making fun of them because they're so basic. It's like the most basic white. You would think these are okay.
I don't. No. I don't understand. What do you want the fucking shoe to have? Like fire
design,
shit coming out of it?
I don't know. When it, like when
it's,
style.
When it's attached to the MVP of the fucking NBA.
It's got to have some flash, bro.
Exactly. It's the most it will be one of the most popular releases all year long.
Well, then maybe it'll sell.
It just looks like it was belonging like JCPenney.
So when big shoes like this come out, kids line up out the door like waiting to purchase. Yeah. Ain't no fucking kid lining up the door to buy a pair of fucking white-looking knockoffs.
There's already one like that in Foot Locker.
Yes, there is.
Right now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Big Five Sporting Goods.
Yeah, Five, yeah.
I remember the
Johnny's fucking.
It was like
Payless
a thing.
Shoe source,
but it was like a thing at one point to get really basic white clean shoes. Remember
it's
that?
Still style, bro.
Played against sports. I probably find it. There.
I have at least five or six pairs of whites that never see outside that are purely for wearing indoors. So white shoes.
What do you mean? How does that work?
I only wear them indoors.
He's in your own house?
Dirty.
No, like when I go like places, like if I'm traveling, they go outside in my car.
Okay, I got confused for a second.
I don't do white sneakers for that reason.
Yeah, yeah. I wear them like if I'm going to Vegas or I'm going places that they're going to stay clean, dude.
Dude, would you, if somebody just walked up and just stepped on them? Would you like
that's like a dick move.
That's what I know, but would you do?
It would depend. If it was on purpose, then we'd have an issue. But if it was like you accidentally did it, I'd be like, oh. Man, but that's part of it. I mean, you're wearing shoes. Everyone's foot's been stepped on before. If it's an accident, it's an accident.
You stepped into poo-poo.
But if you saw that, like I was a shoe guy, and you're like, oh, those are Yeezys, and you walked over and you fucking stepped on my Yeezys, like, yeah, I'm gonna Yeezy my foot right in your ass. That's what I'm gonna do.
What's a Yeezy?
Yeah.
It's a not cheap shoe.
Yeah, very expensive.
Well, but what is it? Not what is in it.
What do you mean? It's a shoe.
Oh, that's just a general term for.
It's Kanye West's shoe. When Kanye.
You bought Kanye's shoes.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, explain to me though. Like I know why they're so expensive and all that, but explain to me when. Like he released his first one, and
bro.
Like, why that's so popular?
I have so much respect for you, so it's okay for me to lose a little bit of respect.
Okay,
but I just did.
Yeah,
but there's still a lot.
You
bought his fucking. That guy's god damn it.
Well, if you're a shoe collector like I am, you buy some shoes because of that. Because I know it's got huge value. Like I bought those shoes, and they're worth more than what I paid for them.
Everybody
right?
loves those.
Oh,
shoes.
They're worth a lot of money now.
Yeah, yeah, no, yeah. But they're between $3,500 and $8,000 for.
Fuck
a
off.
Yeah.
A fucking shoe?
Yeah.
Well, God, that makes me so angry.
The tips of them have 14 karat gold tips laces. The tips of them have these little screw on, they screw on and they're gold. And the bottoms glow and they're fancy pantsy, dude. So shoes like that, you hold on to them. Like those.
This is the craziest thing I've ever heard.
Those lasers, the new, those retro fours that I just got, those will, I mean, they were bought at $250. They would retail right now. You could resell them for $500 easily right now. So some shoes are worth you know, they go up in value now. The shoe game here. You guys want to watch a cool TED? Actually, I don't know if you'll watch it, but whatever. A cool TED.
What was that supposed to be?
There's a cool TED talk on just the shoe industry now and what it's turned into. They compare it to the stock market. And the way you take care of certain shoes, they'll go up in value, and things that are sought after are really, really expensive. And even if they're worn, and they have different levels, like, is it in the box, the original box, still it's worth this much?
Does it smell like cheese?
Yeah. Is it out of its original box? Is this value? Is it been worn? It's still worth. Well, I mean, anything, I can wear shoes and still sell them.
Almost anything can have a value, perceived value. I mean, you ever go on eBay and look up like toys and shit, like old toys?
Yeah, no, exactly.
I'm so angry. My old He-Mans are worth so much money.
Like size fingernails.
I knew a kid when I was in high school that was collecting all the McDonald's toys, and I thought he was a weirdo. He literally had thousands under his bed. He had this big old thing, and they were all in the box. They were
somebody
all
out there wants that.
Oh, bro, there's an almanac for that. There's big money in it.
Wow.
Like some of the original, the original Hamburger Helper guy, like the very first one that ever. Oh, yeah. There's
like Bob's Big Boy. Yeah. I remember like somebody collected all the Bob's Big Boy. Like
for Mickey D's, there's an almanac for it, bro. There's money in it, especially if you have the original ones that were like a big movie, like a blockbuster movie where McDonald's partnered up with it. Like, I don't know if they did Batman or one of those. But
I'm still collecting
those
Star Wars figurines, by the way.
Well, and I'm sure Mickey D's, did they do a Star Wars collaboration? I'm sure they did at one point. And if you had that Star Wars toy that came out,
aren't they doing it now?
I'm sure.
Is it Disney?
I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know who's aligning with them or not right now.
Marvel. I don't know. Who knows?
I don't know.
I don't pay attention to them.
Maybe they'll call us. Who knows? But,
yeah. No. So that's why.
Maybe they'll call us.
That Justin would shit and come at the same time.
Whoa.
If Star Wars called us, right? That's... Hey guys, can we? Justin would be like, oh! I'm like,
that actually sounds amazing. Like it would be like, my face. It's painful and it's good.
That's horrible.
What the fuck?
I don't know what happened.
Yeah, anyway. That got weird.
Yeah, how did we go? How did you just take us?
That was the worst analogy. I had to go with it.
Yeah, that was the worst analogy ever.
So listen.
Is it? I don't think it's possible. It's like sneezing with your eyes open, right? It's like,
dude,
I've seen somebody do that. I swear to God, it freaked me out. Right. Oh my God. You're like, are you a robot? What are you?
Your follow-up question, can you shit and come at the same time?
Listen, it's possible. That's all I'm going to say. Okay, I'm not going into detail. Have you, about sneezing while you're taking a piss?
Oh God. Yeah. Oh, no.
That's horrible.
Don't do that. Yeah.
It's like, you could, I think, seriously.
Wow, instant cleanup.
I don't think there's any science to about this, but I think it could literally split your dick in half. Right. You know what I mean? That's how much pressure comes out when you sneeze.
Fillet it.
When you start getting older, you just start sitting down as a man. you just sit.
You just go sit down.
Oh, of course, I grab an article. I grab an article or something going there. I'm reading some, Instagram shit or something
I'm
like that.
Tired.
And I'm going to the bathroom. I'm like, I don't have to shit, but I'm going to sit down. I think.
Yeah.
I'm going to be here for a minute.
Because that's the only way we can get. That's the only place.
My escape zone.
Exactly. It's the only way you.
I can't.
That's how we get away. We lock the door. Nobody bothers us.
That's what it's like.
If somebody walks by, I'm like messing with the toilet paper, like
pretending.
Yeah, pretending.
The kids
tell me you don't do that.
You know what's funny is I don't have kids and I do that, which I can imagine it's times 10 for you guys.
Yeah,
you go
or I just make like a random grunt, like,
I'm a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I need it was a little bit longer.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, the kids are
forum questions. Hey,
the kids sound like they're fighting upstairs, they gotta go take a dump. That's how you work it.
Yeah,
dude, we started a little controversy with our last episode when we were ranking body parts on women. And then someone put
so
up
silly.
Someone put out body parts on men, and unanimously, not unanimous, it was like a majority, like abs is always near the top. It's always about abs.
Yeah.
And
you saw how many of those ladies brought up the chest though.
The pectacles.
Yeah, the pectacles.
Yeah.
They were there.
Yeah, I know. No, it's important.
Abs and
it's
arms.
It's just funny because it's so like, subjective. It's like you could take like 100 women from anywhere and it's going to be different.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean. Well, everything. Everybody has their preference based off of some random thing.
I would think certain cultures are would be different, right? Yeah. Different.
The sexiest body part's the wallet. Let's be real now. Boom.
Now you're talking.
Funny part is none of them say that.
That is science.
Think if we put that out there.
Bro, they've done studies.
Do you like the chest, the arm, the abs, or the wallet? Which one of those would be your number?
They have done literal studies where women will rank a man's like attractiveness on a 1 to 10, right?
Yeah.
And they'll rank these men, and one guy will get a consistent 4 across the board. Then they'll show the same guy.
They put him in a suit.
No, they'll put down like that their net worth is higher. Like, oh, no, he earns over $250,000 a year, whatever. Oh, it's worth – they actually figure out the number. I believe it was worth 2 or 3 points.
Whoa.
So if you're a 5,
of course,
but you're a millionaire, you're automatically now an 8.
Wow.
Yes. It's the way it is.
You hear that, guys? Quit spending so much time in the gym. Probably should be spending at your job.
It's also that, and then it's if you're like really, really well known for like some random skill, or like, you know, if you're like there's been so many ugly ass musicians that have like knockouts for wives.
Yeah, it's perceived. It's the same thing. Perceived power.
Well, that like, maybe he'll write a song about me.
Yeah, as you say, there's something about a woman getting serenaded. I think that has something to do with that too.
Yeah, like, that's power right there for sure.
You're lucky. You're good looking.
Yeah, thank God. I can't see.
You ain't gonna do shit in that department.
You gotta get creative, man.
I've had girls
be like America's Top Chef.
I've had girls before asking that too. Could you sing me a song? Like, are you fucking kidding me?
Like, you're lucky you get to look at my face. Yeah. Just be happy with that.
Sing a song.
Nobody's that perfect. But because we gave exercises and like what to do for the butt, I think we should talk about a little bit about how to build a six pack. Like how to really build a six pack. Because there's a lot, just like the glutes and other body parts.
I see where you're going with this.
There's a lot of misconceptions on how the abs should be worked. Mm-hmm. For some reason, it's like abs need to be trained with high reps. You can't use weight with abs. Right. Don't do heavy resistance.
You don't want to do full range of motion.
Yeah. And one thing they do get right, however, which is funny because they only apply it to abs, is that you should train them frequently. Like most bodybuilders agree, you hit your abs more frequently than the rest of the body.
Right, they think that, like, for some reason, just the core is the only one that recovers.
You know what we used to say. I mean, I remember as a trainer, used to say, because it's comprised mostly of fast twitch fibers in comparison to anywhere else.
You mean slow twitch.
Or slow twitch fibers, then they can take that higher repetition, or it's more advantageous for you to be doing lots and lots of repetitions versus...
Well, you're just not adding a whole lot of load to like those movements.
Well, that's what we used to say. And we know that's a bunch of bullshit now, but I remember that's what we used to...
I used to work my core. I always worked my core. It's not like I neglected it. And I've gotten very lean. I gotten very lean in the past. I'd gotten down to single digit body fat, and I would have a six pack, but it would kind of be there. It wouldn't really stick out. It was just kind of flat, you know? And when I figured out that using resistance on my abs was the same as using resistance anywhere else, and that I could build my abs out, it blew me away, because all of a sudden I had a six pack at, number one, higher body fat percentages.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, my abs kind of stuck out without me flexing. They were just way more visible. But I didn't have I didn't have abs like that at all. Like now I have a six pack at 10 or 11%, whereas before I'd have to get down to 7.
This is also why I think I don't, and that's why it's one of the things I struggle with, is because I don't train them enough. And I notice
how often do you hit your be honest, how often do you hit your abs?
Rarely ever.
Wow.
Yeah, rarely ever.
Wow.
It's probably the most neglected part as far as...
Bro, your abs... So you don't work out your abs, but you store very little body fat around your midsection
This is a perfect example how I tell people, like, you know, in my opinion, right? This is my opinion. You guys can debate me on this or not. But I feel like, you know, when you're putting together your priority list, you know, and of course, overall health and balance is number one. But when you start building an aesthetic physique... You know, most of my focus and emphasis are on all my weak points. You know, ask me what I do the most. I do my legs and my calves more than anything else. And then and then my arms are the least amount, after my abs. Like, these are my strengths on my body. So for me, they get neglected the most, you know. Yeah. And I'd love to say that I hit everything the right amount and the most I possibly can. But no, in reality, there's times when, you know, I miss a day in the gym, or, you know, I only have so much time. And so my priority is always going to be on, you know, my lagging body parts. So,
well, see, I was in the same camp as you, as to where I'd be like, well, I'm just going to get lean. And the truth is, you're not going to have a six pack unless you get lean enough. Like, you could build your abs and make them fantastic. But if you got fat over them, they're just not going to be visible. Mm. So that was always my mentality, was, well, I'm just going to worry about getting lean. And my core was plenty strong. I mean, I could deadlift a lot, I could squat a lot, I could overhead press a lot. So I never really place a ton of emphasis on them, but I did work them, and I did work them the way I thought you were supposed to, which was the high rep stuff. And I'll never forget, it was like an epiphany where I remember, I forgot where it was. I was maybe on social media, and there was a guy just standing there, and he was muscular, and he had these just block abs. I remember thinking, like, my abs are just not, like, I don't have a lot of muscle on my abs, you know what I mean? And a lot of people, especially in the like physique world, they say, don't build your core because you'll get a bigger waist. That's bullshit. My waist hasn't gotten any bigger, but my core has become more pronounced from using resistance. So I went from doing like high rep crunches, high rep leg raises, high rep, you know, exercises to doing heavy, you know, Roman chair sit-ups, heavy leg raises, you know, exercises that are more, you know, designed to build muscle, like with any other body part.
Yeah.
Now, the key here, however, and I think the reason why high reps became a thing for abs in the beginning was because when you use a lot of weight on core exercises, it's really fucking easy to stop, you know, really flexing at the lumbar and just to start flexing at the hip. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's easy for me to do a sit-up and just keep my body rigid but bend at the hips using my hip flexors and have my core as a stabilizer. And I see people doing leg raises like this all the time. Like, they'll hang on the bar, they'll do leg raises, and they get very little pelvic tilt at the top, which is what the abs do.
Right. The most important piece of the exercise.
Yeah, all it's doing is stabilizing while the hip flexors do movement.
Mm-hmm.
And this ends up making you hip flexor dominant, and then you don't really build really muscular abdominals. And what you need to realize, especially with the abs, is the function of the abs is to bring the pelvis closer to the rib cage, or vice versa, bring the rib cage closer to the pelvis. So it's that anterior pelvic tilt to posterior pelvic tilt that the abs are doing. And they can stabilize, but that's their full range of motion. So if you train in that full range of motion and you add resistance, you'll build abs, and then you'll have visible abs at lower, at higher body fat percentages, which is what blew me away.
What's interesting, like, so for me, it revolves more around rotation. So I, you know,
obliques.
Obliques. Yeah, let's talk about that. I guarantee I would work my obliques more than my abs. Like, right. I don't do very many crunches per se. You know, if anything, it's like, you know, leg lifts or you know, something along those lines, but very isometric. So for me, like, if anything, just because of the way that I've trained for performance and for, you know, doing any type of sports, my focus really is to be able to stabilize myself through all kinds of different planes and movement. And so a lot of that, you know, core training, quote unquote, is, you know, more based off of, like, you know, wood chops and you know, trunk rotations and, you know, planks and, you know, stabilizing my entire body with my core, as opposed to, you know, crunching and building and developing, which is, you know, I feel like I'm neglecting it from that aspect.
Well, let's be honest. I mean, obliques are extremely important, and they're forgotten. People tend to forget about how impressive good muscular obliques look.
Right.
And when people talk about, especially women, we'll talk about the V that the guy will get down the abs or whatever. Mm-hmm. Part of that is really nice developed obliques that kind of creates that illusion. And, you know, everybody's worried, especially in the physique world and the bodybuilding world, like, don't work your obliques because you'll get a bigger waist.
Well, if you actually stabilize you left to right.
Well, you know, how, like, much you gonna build
a function.
How much are you going to build your fucking obliques?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm sure if you're on a shit ton of growth hormone and your organs are growing,
yeah, they're not going to get that big.
And you're getting big, you know, big belly, that's different. But if you're everybody who's listening, 99% of everyone's listening, and you build the hell out of your obliques, your waist might get bigger 1/10 of an inch, but you're going to look smaller just because you have these developed muscular obliques and core. And I would even say that obliques are probably more impressive to me than super developed abs. When I see, like, really good obliques on someone, it just makes their core looks tight. You know what I'm saying? It looks really, really tight.
Well, I'm a lot like Justin. That's how I feel like I get a lot of my core training. I mean, have you ever done, like, you know, speed deadlifts before? My abs get fucking sore from something like that. I mean,
you're bracing.
Right? Yeah, you're gonna rip 315 pounds off the ground, you know, several times, like, every time before it goes up, and they explode up. Well, I mean, my abs are the first thing that engage, and, you know, engaging those suckers hard before you pull that much weight up, I always get sore from things like that. So whenever I add a new movement, so I do a lot of explosive type things like that really get my abs. So I don't directly train them enough. And I honestly do it as I get closer to showtime. I've always had this kind of theory with my abs, is that okay, well, why I'm going to do all the big gross movements that's going to burn the most calories, burn the most fat, give me the most bang for my buck as far as building this physique. And then as I start to lean down and shred, then I start to incorporate more of this, mm-hmm. you know, this abdominal work, because then they're going to start to reveal themselves, so they'll be more pronounced. And for me, it's always been a mental game for myself, because it's a muscle that's not small. It's the muscle that's covered by, you know, a layer of fat, since most of us hold a lot of belly fat, where if we hold any fat at all, it's going to go there and it's going to cover those six pack abs. So I find, you know, waiting until I can kind of see them a little bit is more motivating for me to train them more and put more emphasis on it. Otherwise, you're doing a lot of movements that don't burn a lot of calories, don't give you a lot of bang for your buck. And I could be doing other things that get me faster to revealing those abs. So,
well, I'll tell you what, for me, it was huge, because when I changed the way I train, and this is when,
well, you also have in my opinion, you have the most pronounced abdominal area out of all of us, for sure. And you can see that on you. You can see that even when you are at your, you know, highest body fat, your abdominals look way better than mine do, for sure.
Well, it got to the point, like I said, when I started training them a particular way with resistance, you know, frequency, as like we always prescribe in the MAPS programs, and focusing on that pelvic tilt, that's when I came up with the no BS mm-hmm. six-pack formula. That's when I put that program together, because I saw in myself what a tremendous difference it made in how my midsection looked. I'm telling you right now, I never had a six-pack unless I got shredded before. Now, I don't have to get nearly as lean, and my abs will stick out of my shirt, which is crazy. It never happened before. But now if I eat like a big meal and I'm relatively lean, you can see my abs coming out of my shirt. And that's only because I built them. Yeah. I had to develop them.
Which makes total sense.
And it's crazy.
It's no different than every other muscle when you think about it.
It's crazy how much, yeah. And I don't know what it was that, why I was, didn't even think of this, but you can develop your abs like any muscle, or your obliques like any muscle. You can develop them, and when they become developed, you're not going to get huge. Like, no matter what I do, I'm not going to get massive. I mean, the abs are not massive muscles, but they will become more kind of pronounced and visible. And so if you think of somebody at, let's say, 12%, a guy at 12% or 11% body fat, which is getting lean now, you're starting to get into the 10% range where you're starting to get lean, and you can kind of see an outline of his abs. Imagine if you just built them so they got bigger. Oh. Boom. Now you can see them at higher body fat percentages. I've had women who have done, you know, followed the program, the no BS six pack formula. And they've always, of course, been taught high reps. They've been taught high reps for everything, but especially for core. They applied just some of the concepts of, you know, using more resistance and that full range of motion. And they're like, I've never had a six pack. All of a sudden I have one. And it's just because you built them out. And I think that's one of the biggest myths in ab training is, A, you need to train them with high reps because somehow you can spot reduce, which you can't. Or B, don't ever use resistance with your abs, or you're going to get, you know, a bigger waist. I mean, I would be shocked to see how your abs would respond if you train that, because you don't store body fat there.
No,
anyway.
I'll tell you what, it just hasn't been a focus. And, you know, since we've talked about this on the show, I always love taking some of the things and applying what we've been recently sharing. And it's just, I have never, the most emphasis I've ever put on my abs is, like I said, when I get about 2 weeks out from a show, you know, and a lot of that is just because I'm ramping up my activity, and I'm living in the gym as I'm getting closer to showtime, and I'm finding other things to do. And I'm like, hey, why not work on my abs? Even if it is a strength of mine, I'm going to start to work on them. But I have never, you know, gone after it and really, you know, created as a focus session. So I tell you what I'll do is I'll take our no BS and I'll implement it within like a focus session.
Dude, your abs are going to get crazy because you already have, like I said, you don't store body fat around your midsection. You're already lean. It's just going to get like, you're going to get like little bricks.
Yeah, you get some bricks.
Yeah, you're going to get some bricks.
Well, because I'm this, you know, dude who's all into aesthetics and stuff. I mean, I can see that on your body. I look at your physique and it's the very first thing that I notice right away mm-hmm. is that, you know, you have these blocky abs.
Do we just become best friends?
Well, I notice that like my abdominal region will really change throughout the day just by my water and food intake.
Right, right.
You know,
right.
Because they're not very pronounced, you know, and as I fill up, in fact, it actually, I get more water covering over them and they don't look as good and as pronounced. Where, you know, other muscles on my body, when I fill water and
they look bigger,
bigger and they look more full and they're more pronounced, where it's the opposite. My abs look the best in the morning time, right? Not after I feed and fuel them. So, you know, I know if I were to train them like another muscle group, that I would get more out of them. It's just, it's one of those things I've neglected for a long time. So maybe we'll put a little experiment to test.
I'd be interested to see that. I mean, really, really key is
someone was just talking on the forum about, you know, it was fun watching when I did my transformation, Justin did his transformation and following
just
along.
Just following along.
We haven't done anything like that. Yeah, so
that'd be a good one.
I'll volunteer myself to do something like that. We're in the middle posting of talking about leaning down. Yeah. I'm down to do
it's
something.
Good timing too, because it's summertime. I think a lot of people right now, why not?
I have more awesome.
But I want to be clear, like if you don't, and because if you enroll in one of our, if, in the No BS Six Pack, we really break it all down. It's all programmed out, just like our other programs where everything's spelled out for you with videos and all that stuff. But if you decide to do this on your own and use resistance, you got to be very careful, because using resistance on your core, most of you listening right now, your core, if you're fit, acts well as a stabilizer. Mm-hmm. But in terms of working through its full range of motion, most of you don't train them properly. Mm-hmm. So adding resistance to that is going to make it very difficult. Long lever crunches, which is no resistance, it's just a crunch on the physio ball where you wrap around the ball, crunch over the ball with your arms, always maintaining, you know, your arms straight out behind your head or next to your ears. That's a lot of resistance for a lot of people to do, right? I can't even tell you how many people I've trained who are very fit, and they're like, oh, I want to, you know, use resistance on my abs. And I'm like, try this first.
Yeah.
And then, you know, forget doing hanging leg raises because you just don't have the control.
Yeah.
But if you do this stuff, do it slow, controlled, and perfect form. Like, there's no other body part I can think of where a slight deviation in form not only ruins the exercise, but it puts you at high risk for injury. Because if you're pulling with resistance and you're using all hip flexors, especially your iliopsoas muscle, you are going to have... This is when people complain about back pain from doing abs.
Yeah.
When they do leg raises, like, I can't do them anymore. That hurts my back. It's not their core. It's because they're psoas, which connects near the lumbar.
Well, what's happening too is real similar to what we just discussed in a recent episode about the sleepy butt, you know, about the neurological connection. Is a lot of people,
hip flexor dominant.
Yes, have been for so. If you mean when you look at, when you think
it's
of a crunch,
go-to recruitment.
Yeah, right. Think of a crunch where someone's bringing their knees and their shoulders in. Is, you know, what we're trying to happen is that lumbar is what you're looking for.
Yeah.
But what really people visually see on the outside is
bending.
Yeah, exactly. They see bending. They see knees and elbows coming together, and that's what a crunch is. But you can bring your knees up to your elbows with very little movement in the lumbar if you don't do it correctly. So there takes a lot of mind muscle connection, or that central nervous connection, central nervous system connection that we talk about. And people have sleepy syndrome in their abs. They don't know how to connect to them very well. They don't know how to engage that and then to flex at the spine instead of bringing it up their
legs. I have seen this among so many really fit, lean people. Like, you wouldn't believe. Like, they'll come to me fit, lean, but working out consistently for a long time, and I'll have them do a core assessment, and right away, oh, hip flexor dominance.
Yeah.
How do we correct that? This is what we do. I'll have them activate their glutes, maybe put their legs up on a bench and kind of bridge just a little bit off the floor, activate their glutes, keep their glutes tight, and then do a crunch. Because, you know, once you activate the glutes, the hip flexors have to relax.
Right.
And it's so funny watching them, like, try to come up without the hip flexors. And it's like, you know, when you first work out a muscle after going on layoff and it kind of shakes a little bit, they'll get that shake. Yeah. They're like, why am I shaking? It's because you are not, your body doesn't know how to fire.
You crunch them on the bench. You said you crunch them on the bench within a
brick. So what you're doing, so let's say you're on the floor. So yeah. I'm on my back on the floor. I'll elevate. I'll put my legs up bent with my heels up on a bench.
Got you.
Then what you do is you drive into the bench with your heels and lift your butt off the floor just an inch or two and just keep the glutes. So all you're doing is you're activating the glutes. Hold that position
while
do a slow crunch.
Yeah, yeah.
This is not an ab builder. This is not going to build your core. But what it is going to do is it's going to change the recruitment pattern, which we talked about in a previous episode. All it's going to do is it's going to teach you to activate your core and your abs independent of your hip flexors. And the reason why activating your glutes does that is because it's called reciprocal inhibition. When I activate one muscle, the opposing muscle will naturally relax. If I don't do that, and I just have a person do a crunch and I say, focus on your abs, their hip flexor is going to activate every single... It's their default, you know...
I'll have to try pattern. That. Like, I've never thought of doing it. I've always used like a small stability ball, put it on their back, and then put them in a floor or put them in a bridge position so then their glutes are... And emphasize keeping the hips elevated.
Yeah, no matter what you do, as long as you activate the glutes and hamstrings while crunching the entire time, then the hip flexors are far more likely to be relaxed, which allows you then to separate the hip flexors from that flexion at the spine, and it gets that recruitment pattern to change. So And this is actually a relatively easy imbalance to correct. Like once you do that and you practice that for like a week or two, then you go to your other exercises and you start with no resistance and you focus, do maybe a Roman chair sit up or a leg raise with your knees bent, but you do like that reverse crunch at the top, do it real slow. Then you'll start to be able to fire the core properly. And let me tell you, when you do these exercises properly, I see people doing like leg raises and they're doing like 30 reps. You ain't doing shit right, dude. You do a proper leg raise with that pelvic tilt at the top. And if you want, keep your legs long, make that lever long, and do a real hard pelvic tilt. That shit is not, it's not easy. And I'm not talking about the freaking CrossFit kick the bar with my feet, you know, hip flexor extraordinaire exercise.
Momentum.
I'm talking about bringing your legs up and doing a reverse crunch at the top. That's a very difficult.
Yeah, loss of focus
exercise. Very, very difficult exercise to do properly.
Well, I think that's a good point to add, too, is that people get so caught up in the, you know, how many they can do.
Reps and they have no quality control in their body mechanics, which is where you need to start. And you need to assess, like they're mentioned, like, is this even firing properly? Can I feel this sensation? Like, you should be able to feel it if done correctly. And then if not, you should take measures to open that channel.
You know, it's a good example is, you know, the what is it? The acro wheel or the wheel that you hold with your hands and you roll out. You go on your knees and you roll out.
Yeah.
Nobody does that right.
Yeah.
Nobody does that right.
Nobody tucks their pelvic.
No, but everybody goes out. If I can pull up a million videos on YouTube and every fucking trainer presenting that exercise will go down with an anterior pelvic tilt. Every single one of them will maintain this anterior pelvic tilt and use the hip flexors and lats to pull themselves up every single time.
So I saw a girl in my class was doing it correctly, and I was so floored.
Wow.
Yeah. We have an ab. We have rollout, the ab dolly rollout thing, and it's just like a little thing. And I looked over, and I'm like, she's no way. Who taught you that? Right away, I want to know, because it's like it's rare to see somebody do that without that pelvic drop.
Yeah, if the way you should do it is you should actually have a rounded back. Yeah,
she had a totally cat back.
That's it. And
she had a cat back while she did it. I was like, damn.
That's it. And you roll out. Once you get out to the end of it, your rounded back kind of flattens a little bit. So you go from posterior pelvic tilt to start to go to anterior. You don't want to go full anterior with that much resistance, but you're getting there. Hmm. And then the way you pull yourself up is not by pulling with your knees and pulling with your hands. It's by going flat back, back to rounded, and you pull your, it's like you're doing this crunch with tons of resistance.
Cat cow.
Exactly. Yeah. And do you know
that's how
hard
I have people start a lot of times just for core activation techniquing? Yeah.
Do you know how hard that exercise is to do, by the way, right?
Oh, yeah. Just to be able to articulate your spine like that. A lot of people can't do that.
They can't do that. It's very, very difficult.
Oh, it's very difficult.
The same thing with the plank.
Yeah.
Just a good old fashioned plank. People think they just suspend their body above the floor.
Right.
And if you look at them from the side, anterior pelvic tilt. They're they're literally doing a hip flexor plank.
Yeah.
But when in reality, what they need to do
is
stay low, tuck your tailbone real hard, squeeze your abs, now hold yourself up. That's boom.
It. Well, you know, this reminds me a little bit about one of these questions that we just recently answered about like our certifications and how much of our stuff do we really use. I remember doing like your quadrupeds and those movements like that, that you would just go through the movements and teach what you've been taught, when in reality, like, there should be so much detail.
Yeah, more emphasis, like, as far as like what it's doing and what you're recruiting and what's going on, why you're doing this, like cross-sectional firing and all these kinds of things.
Yes.
The whole purpose of that movement is to be extremely...
I got to communicate, you know, on my left to right side, like, properly.
But how often do you walk at a gym and you see trainers doing the quadruped with people and they're just kind of doing...
Dude, I tell you what, like, I've actually started people like crawling, you know, like I swear to God, like it's so essential to like mechanics, like with athletes, like if you're not having proper cross-sectional firing, like that's why these animal movements, like that's the only place I see like this is relevant, because it's like now I'm teaching my body to work, you know, on these different planes and like cross-sectional planes. Mm-hmm. So
this is one of the reasons why trainers don't even focus a lot on this stuff, is because they think each exercise is supposed to be a workout, in the sense of, oh, you know, if I'm doing quadruped and I'm not sweating, well, then why am I wasting my time?
So
you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But it's not a sweat exercise. That's not the purpose of it. The purpose of it is, like Justin was saying, cross-sectional firing. And you're trying to teach the right and the left to communicate. And believe me, you get some people and you get them in that quadruped position and they start getting wobbly and losing their balance, even though it's a very stable position.
Oh, yeah. Not only that, but very few can actually do it correctly where both sides are equal. Oh, yeah.
You know, and point and extend all the way.
With a neutral spine.
Their shoulder doesn't even allow them to get, you know, proper mobility to raise it high enough a lot of times.
So. And that's why I think with the core, especially the core, the obliques, the abs, technique is crucial. crucial, absolutely crucial, because you can do an exercise and not have the right technique, like we just discussed, the plank or the ab rollouts or leg raises or whatever, and not do it right and do tons of reps and not get not even close to the kind of results that you would get with proper technique. Another one is flag pulls, you know, the old school, you know, flag pulls off a bench.
Great exercise.
If you do that shit and you let yourself go anterior pelvic tilt the whole time.
Of course you love those, Rocky.
Oh, yeah. That is a dangerous exercise. But old if you school. Maintain that that tucked tailbone, and then at the very bottom, you untuck it a little
that's
bit.
A, that's a legit move.
Bro, right I'll do six brutal. To I'll do 6 to 8 or 10 reps on that max.
That's it.
And my abs, it's like I did deadlift for my abs.
Yeah.
Like that's literally what it feels like. So
that's legit.
And the, you know, some of the feed, like I said, some of the feedback that we've gotten from some of the programs that we put out, like the No BS Six Pack, which is, you know, obviously that's just an ab
does that
workout.
Does that happen to have the exercise that you were just using an example?
It's got the most effective exercises that I've found for most people. And it's broken down just like MAPS. You know, there's foundational workouts and there's triggering sessions, and it matches and it blends perfectly with MAPS. So what you would do is you do a foundational MAPS workout on one day, and then and ab trigger sessions on that day, and then on the next day you would do trigger sessions for the, you know, for the MAPS program, but then you would do foundational for core. So then you're in the gym, let's say you have MAPS red, you're in the gym 5-6 days a week, alternating between foundational, you know, full body workouts and foundational core workouts, and then then alternating trigger sessions for each body part.
I think one of
that's how I work out. That's typically that's what my workout looks like.
Yeah. I think one of us should definitely post the one you were just discussing though, because I think that
which one, the rollouts?
No. With the glute activation.
Oh, yeah.
Just because I think that's very common. I think it's very common that a lot of people have
super
a
good correctional technique that they need to know about.
Very good correctional. And it's very basic. Either the one that I discussed or the one you used to discuss, I think are both simple movements that will blow somebody away on, especially if you're somebody who's like, I can never feel it in my abs when I work my abs. I can never feel it in my abs. You know, there's a lot of that.
And the problem is, too, is a lot of people will feel it in their abs, but the abs are acting just mainly as stabilizers and not training them in the full range of motion. Like if I bend my elbow just slightly with my palm up and I lift a heavy dumbbell and I do a front delt raise, I'll get a deltoid that's fatigued, but my bicep will start to fatigue also because I'm holding it at the slight bend. Yeah. And that's what's happening with people's cores, is that they're doing these exercises, they're not training properly, and they're like, well, my abs do get sore. But I mean, it's in essence, you're just doing isometric. You're not really working the full range of motion.
Right.
Think about a rotational chop, right? If I'm not using full rotation at my spine, I can still rotate. I can pivot off my feet and turn my hips with my whole body, or I can keep my hips. I can rotate with my hips and then start to rotate with my midsection as well, and get the obliques to twist, you know, the upper body separate from the lower body.
And not just your shoulders either.
Right.
You know, going like
right.
From
it's the
top.
Exact same thing we just talked about with the sleepy butt syndrome. It's the same thing. I mean, you have not made that good pathway and connection, and you need to make that connection in order for that to work. And is it going to work? Of course, it's responsible for part of that movement. So it's impossible, just like a squat. The glutes are working. They're getting activated. But why do I always feel it in my quads? Well, that's because of that neurological connection.
Yeah.
Same thing goes for the abs. For so many years, you've taught the hip flexors and everything else to engage to help you.
I've just personally seen with my own clients doing this properly, of course, adding resistance, full range of motion, core exercises, and I'm just like right before my eyes, they just develop their abs, and I'm starting to become convinced that the muscles of the core have a decent ability to build. That you can actually build them to the point where you can see them more so than like the calves. I don't know why they get thrown in the category with calves, or sometimes calves just, I mean, I'm living example. You know, I've added a half an inch over the last 10 years of my calves, you know what I'm saying? But with my abs, it took a matter of like 3-4 months. Literally, it was like 3 or 4 months where my abs went from flat to boom. Big difference. It was.
I'm going to be really interested to kind of give it a go and see what happens, because
excellent.
You know, I think that I'm interested to see if there's some truth to what you're saying, or it's more genetics play a role or not. We'll see. You know,
watch what happens, because I know what your abs look like now, and you barely work them.
Yeah, and you know, I'll definitely keep it real and track everything for sure. You know, if I put my mind to something like that, it just hasn't been a focus for me, just because it's always been a strength. But, you know, one of the things I love about what we do in our job is it keeps it fun and interesting to always be changing things up and switching goals. And it'll be a fun little goal to go after and see. Because I wouldn't mind having abs about 13% body fat. That means
you already have them at 12%, you asshole.
That means more gelato, bro. That's what that means. That means more gelato.
Well, I mean, the No BS six-pack formula works with any workout. You can plug it in. You can find it at mindpumpmedia.com. And if you like Mind Pump, leave us a five-star rating and review on iTunes. If we like your review, you might win a free t-shirt. And also check us out on Instagram at Mind Pump Radio. You can find me at Mind Pump Sal. Adam is at Mind Pump Adam. Justin is at Mind Pump Justin. And you can even find Doug at Mind Pump Doug.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now, plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.